Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you from Building 25, where our illustrious Channel 9 studios are located. I have a special guest to talk about some interesting topics when it comes to writing code.
Yeah.
Tell us who you are and what you do,
Hello.
My friend.
Hello, I'm Tomasz Matuszek. I work on the Rosin project. And I've been working on scripting, interactive, debugging, live unit testing. And all these things have a common kind of theme, which is interactive development. Right, so you write some code, you see some feedback right away, you know, you debug, you edit while you're debugging, you can experiment, etc. Right, so you have this very interactive experience with development, which is contrasted to like edit code, you know, wait for build to finish, wait for the diagnostics to be reported, then start debugging, then break, and then get back to
so there's like a loop that we follow as programmers, right?
Right.
And what we're trying to do is we're trying to shorten the loop.
Exactly. That's exactly.
So give me an example of what that loop is and how sort of these four things that we're going to talk about help with that.
Right. So for example, if you have some errors in your code, right, you want to know about them right away as you're typing. Right. For example, FXCop. Right? You have a bunch of rules. They are checked after you build. Right, so Rosin introduced this concept of analyzers that let you know using squiggles and error lists and stuff like that. They let you know right away as you're typing.
I
so
see.
We're taking it a step further, for example, with live unit testing, where you also see test results. Right? So as you're typing, we are running tests that are affected by the code that you're changing. And you see whether the tests pass or not. Right away. You don't need to like wait for a test to
so that's live unit testing.
That's live unit testing. Right?
So let's talk about we're going to talk about that. I want to see some demos on that. But I'm interested in the scripting,
right?
The REPL and the editing continue. Let's go through each one of those really quickly, and then we'll go through demos of each so people can get a sense for how this is making everything better.
Right. So for example, scripting is basically for your experimentation mostly. Or you can have scripts in build system where you don't want to write a console application, for example, to do some very simple tasks. So if you have simple tasks, you have something trivial, it's good for learning as well because we simplify, we got rid of the ceremony around you know, simple applications. So you can basically start with, you know, hello world, and it's one line of code, right, instead of like public, static, main, blah, 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 right?
So that's scripting. But I've always sort of synonymous with scripting is the REPL, but they're different things, right?
They are related.
Okay.
Right? REPL basically is executing scripts in a loop.
Got it.
Right? So you type a snippet of code, you submit it, we compile it, we run it, we show you the result right away in situ, and then you type another snippet. And those snippets are scripts that are basically chained together. And you can use definitions that you introduce in the first script, you can use in subsequent scripts, etc. So you can kind of build up your context and your program in the REPL.
Awesome.
And then what you can do, once you get to something useful, then you can copy paste it to your app or to your script that is like a file that you can then execute from command line, etc. And I can show you how this experience, we provide two experiences from command line and in Visual Studio, and both are useful in different scenarios, and I can show you.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with the scripting, and then move on to the REPL, and then we'll talk about some of the live unit testing, which is really cool.
So here I have a script, and you know it's a few lines of code, and what it does is it queries GitHub using OctoKit APIs, and it lists all the issues that are assigned to me. This is my GitHub handle. Right, so, and they are related to scripting.
Okay.
Right, so I have this script, and here I have a command line where I use CSI tool, which is tool we ship with MS Build in Visual Studio. And I run that script. I just say, you know, run me this file, and it goes to GitHub. It lists me the issue numbers and the tiles. Title for each issue, and you know that's it's very simple, and you don't need to recompile anything. You know you can if I want to remove, for example, the assignee, right? I can just do this and rerun it again, and now it shows me all the issues regardless of who are they assigned to, right? So you know, if you have something one-off that you want to do with this API, or you want to learn this API, this is really a rapid way how to do that.
So there was an interesting project that started a couple of years ago that was similar to this from Glenn Block. Are they the same things, different things?
It's a script, you are referring to Script.cs, yes, probably. Sir. And Script.cs is built on top of the Rosin scripting APIs. And it's basically where we wanted to go in general, provide a platform or a framework where various folks could implement their own script host.
That's cool.
And customize it as they need. You know, they might have some environments that have special, you know, treatment like Node.js, for example, right? Style, that kind of style, not that we would run it from Node.js, but what Glenn wanted to have similar experience, right? And so this command line tool that I showed is just the CSI, it's just one host. And you can write your own host, and I will actually have a demo that,
that
will show it to you
how, love to, see
how to execute scripts within your own application.
That's cool.
Right, so that's what we wanted to do. And in Visual Studio, we have another host, which is this interactive window. You see the C-sharp interactive, you can open it by going to View Other Windows Interactive. You might be familiar with F-sharp Interactive.
Yeah, of course.
Similar. Or JavaScript has Interactive Windows. So now we have C-sharp Interactive. And this shipped with Visual Studio 2015. And since then, you can, you know, just, you know, evaluate simple expressions. You can start learning C-sharp from here. Right? You just declare variables, you know, etc. And but you can take it further, because now we saw the script here that we have, and what we allow you to do is load that script, and as you see, we have an IntelliSense for paths, right? So this is my demo scripting, you know, GitHub, right? So it completes, I run it, and now I run the same script from here. Right, so you have the same results.
See. So here you're using the REPL, the REPL to load the script and run the results.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. So the question, the thing that you brought up that was interesting to me is that I love the idea of having an application where you could sort of type code into it and evaluate it. How do you make your own host?
Right, so actually that's a good segue to my next demo, which we can look at. All right, so here I have a WPF app which hosts scripting. And let me run it first so that you know what it is. So I have a few text boxes that you can enter values for variable x, variable y. Then you can enter an expression, right? X plus y, let's say, right? It calculates results. And this app is written so that it evaluates the result every time I type something, right? So I change x here, it evaluates right away. I change y. The same thing, I can you know, type something more and it changed. And as you can see, I use pi, which is a constant in system.math. And this shows you that you can configure the environment so that you can get direct access to API of your choice. For example, you import math or any other API, the host can plug in a custom API, right?
And what happens if it's like, like what if it I put P in here and it's not working, it just it just doesn't do
That's
anything.
That's a good question, right? So it doesn't do anything, right? And let me show you the app first, the code first, and then we can return to that, right? So what I have here is essentially I'm running under the debugger already, but what you can see here is a class script globals, which defines the state that the host publishes to the script in the application.
Sure.
So these variables are what the script can access.
Okay.
Right? If I add Z, you could add, access Z. And then we have just the WPF binding here to the property X.
Got it.
You know, when I change it, I rerun the script. The same for variable Y.
Is this arrow syntax
oh,
new?
Oh, right. That's C-sharp 6.
Okay.
Actually, this is maybe even C-sharp 7. In C-sharp 6, we introduce expression body members.
Sure.
Right, and in C-sharp 7, we kind of forgot or didn't have time to do it for all members.
I see.
And in C-sharp 7, you can do it for property getters, for property setters, etc. right? So this is just to save a few characters, yes. You know, and a couple of lines. Right? The important thing is here that this is regular data binding.
Sure.
I property notify change, etc. Mm-hmm. Right. So here you have the expression, and you can see when I change it. Well, if the value is nothing, then I just skip that. Then here I'm calling Rosin APIs to see, essentially, given the string, I'm asking the API, is this a somewhat complete statement or expression?
Right.
So that I don't need to evaluate it if it's not, because I know it's not gonna work anyway. So I can evaluation takes some time, you know, so I can save a little bit here, right? But this is not strictly necessary, right? And then I create a script here, as you can see, in this API call, where I pass in the string. I can show the APIs, right? So you can pass in the code, right? You can pass some options, so I can then we can look at the options, what they are. You pass in the type of the globals that I introduced at the beginning, you know, so that the script can access X and Y variables.
I see.
Right? And then I create a delegate, and I save it for later, right? And the delegate is then used whenever we need to run the script. It just calls the delegate. It's asynchronous, so we use await. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's other than that, that's it. Basically, you know, this is all you need to do to evaluate some code in your app. And you know, just for completeness, right? The reason why we see the pi or the mathematical functions, right? We added import system math, which is the same as if you typed using static system math in your code.
I see. Right?
So you can configure it this way, and you know, let the script access anything that you want to, or not access something that you don't want.
So what if you want to make your own special C# REPL? Mm-hmm. How do you maintain the state? Like is everything in globals? Like here's an example. I wrote a REPL for a machine learning library that I wrote. And what was happening is I wrote it on a really old version of Roslyn. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm wondering, when you're actually running the script host, if I say var x equals 2.5, right, it'll say 2.5 in the REPL, but yeah. Where does that value get stored?
Where is x?
Yeah, where's right. x?
So I actually am ready for your question.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Right, so we have this wiki page on Roslyn GitHub, mm-hmm. where you can go and learn about scripting APIs. And as you can see, the samples are very simple. Right? They are one-liners. Mm-hmm. Right? They get a little bit complicated down the way, but you start with simple stuff like evaluating. This is all you need to evaluate a mm-hmm. Simple script. Right? And to answer your question, right, if you go all the way down, right, it's this kind of style that you want to use for REPL. So you start by running the first submission. You get back state, and then you chain the next submission, right? So that's that, right? So that's the second code snippet that you would enter into REPL, mm-hmm. and then you get state back and you chain it. So you're basically creating this chain, and each link of that chain is holding on all the definitions that you introduced at that point.
I see.
And the subsequent links can look them up. Look the definitions up in those previous links.
The other question I had is this makes it so you can make like a one-line REPL that's sort of a recursive function every time it calls, right? But what if I want to access from the script mm-hmm. some members that are inside my running code?
Right,
the host?
Right. So that's what we did with the global variant.
I see, yes.
Right? And there is the sample here that allows, that introduces the same concept, right? Basically, you want to parameterize the script. Mm-hmm. Right? So you declare a class, it needs to be public, and all the public members of that class will be exposed to the script.
I see.
And you create an instance of that class, you set the values, and you pass it here, and there you go. This script has now access to the fields here.
That's pretty cool, because I mean, like one of the cool things you can do is you could make this an interface. And then you can have mm-hmm. all sorts of crazy ways of implementing a script on functionality that's like sort of injected in too.
Absolutely.
Which is really cool.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
All right, let's go back to the demo.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I kind of derailed you, but
no, that's all right. That's what actually a great question. Yeah. Thanks for. Let's go back to the demo, and we mentioned, well, so what happens if you type something like this that
yes.
is not basically valid, right? It's syntactically valid, but there's no P. Mm-hmm. We didn't expose any P. Well, so since we are already debugging, right, I can edit, show you edit and continue.
Okay, let's do it.
Right? Because what we would like to do is here is actually show you some error, right? Yeah. That P is not defined, right? Right now, we just don't do anything, right? We basically swallow the exception, right? So let's assume you have like more complicated application, right? That where you need to click through to get to some state, right? And then you discover this bug that you want to fix.
Sure.
Right? That's where edit and continue gives you a lot of value because you can edit it at that point, right? Then resume running the application without rebuilding anything. And then you see right away if your fix worked or not.
And that's like, right? That's crazy, right? Because does it work for all cases if you have global stuff? Right. I mean, it feels like that you can't work all over the place.
Yeah. So we can get back to that later, but there's a set of limitations that we have documented on also on our wiki. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the history basically is showing that as we introduce language features, we kind of forgot to kind of make them work. Or I don't know, it wasn't
it's okay. The priority. We're developers, right? I mean, we're like, oh, we made this new shiny thing, and we gotta get the docs out, or we gotta put that into this.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. So it worked great with C# 1.
Yes.
Right. And we added generics, and we added async and dynamic, and during the time, you know, we didn't update edit and continue, so you had less and less code that actually worked with edit and continue, right? And still today, there are some cases, actually quite a few cases where it doesn't work. But what we did with Roslyn is completely rewrote the Roslyn side of the analyzer or, you know, the edit and continue engine. So it's much better now. And I recommend if you gave up on edit and continue, you know, because it didn't work most of the time, I recommend, you know, try it again.
Time to go back.
Give us feedback. We know it's not perfect,
yes,
and it will never be, right? We are pushing the boundaries,
sure,
you know, as much as possible. But, you know, give us a feedback. What is bothering you now, you know, what is great.
Sure. Right? You know, well, let's get into this. Let's see you edit and make P available.
Let's look at that. So, okay, so I enable, here I can enable exceptions, right? Mm-hmm. So the problem was an exception, it was just swallowed somewhere, right? And, you know, so what happens here, like, now I get exception, right? So this is actually a good time to show the new exception dialog in Visual Studio 2017. Mm-hmm. So this is saying, well, there was a compilation error, right? And sure enough, there probably was, right?
Why was it getting swallowed before?
That's a great question. Because we are basically called from data binding and
that's right.
And so it's not handled here, so we don't report the error.
Right.
Let me add the handler, right? So what the debugger can do in edit and continue mode, right? So now we stopped, and then as soon as I type something, we switch to edit and continue mode, right? And what it did was that exception was thrown in somewhere, and it unwound it a little bit before it's thrown. So if I step again, it will throw again, right? But before I do that, I change the code so that we report the exception.
Got it.
Right? So I encode this into try, you know, and so that I don't need to type so much. I have the snippet here, right? So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna catch the error here, set the result, which is the text box with the result, to contain the message. And what I also want to do is make it red, so I distinguish it between between good and bad result, right? And as you can see, I currently don't have the result foreground property yet because it's squiggled, right? Let me first set in, right? So, you know, previously with edit continue, you couldn't add a property, right? And I'm still, just to be clear, I'm still, you know, in the debugger.
Sure, sure.
I haven't rebuilt, I haven't stopped debugging, right? Let me actually add a new field and a property here. Okay, so let's see if it works, right?
That's crazy because you never could do this before.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I felt like edit and continue only let me work in this little shallow area of scope that I couldn't go out of.
Right. No, now you can. You will see you can. And that's basically my point, right? Now, try to forget everything you knew about anything continuum. I'll try to do it again.
It's forgotten. You know,
and you will see that, you know, some things don't work still, but a lot of things work, right? Okay, so I'm adding, I'm ending this property here. Well, I would also like to be data bound to the UI so that I can actually see the change in the color.
So now this is, we're bordering on crazy talk, right? Yes. Because this is not, was generally not possible before.
Yeah. So let me look at my XAML here, and you can see I already have a data binding here for the text. Mm-hmm. Right? So let me try to add data binding for the foreground color here. So this binds to the property we just added. And I still haven't stepped, so, you know, I'm still
like, usually
here.
It would tell me I can't do this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You would get a squiggly that, you know, this is a root edit or something like that, right? And let's see what happens, right? So, okay, so now I pressed F10, which makes a step, right? Let me actually go back because I probably moved it a little bit too much, right? And you can see I can go back. You know, it's no problem. Now, the exception is thrown away. And I can disable that because we don't need to know about it. But let's see. Now it's caught.
Right? Yes.
Now it's caught. The result is updated. The color is updated. I hit F5, and there you go.
Nice. That's really cool.
Right. So now if I type the right expression, it's back there.
That's really cool because, like, between us, you know, people, I feel like I gave up on editing continue. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't giving me the power that I wanted. You're saying it's time to have another look.
Yes.
That's exactly. Awesome. That's
awesome.
That would
awesome. Be great.
So then the other thing, and the last thing you mentioned, is this notion of continually running tests.
Yes.
Can you show us that?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it.
All right, let me close this and switch to another instance of VS. I have a very simple project here, like really demo project, right? So what do you have here? You have some product binary that you're shipping, right? And obviously, you're writing tests for it, right? I'm using XUnit here, so this is the test, right? It's empty right now, right? Then in the middle, I have the product that this is some get person method, whatever. I'm not that creative.
Yeah, so. I mean, this is good stuff, man. Yes. I literally almost fell asleep at your code. But I think it's cool because you want it to be simple enough to see that it's actually doing
something, right? Trust me, it works in larger project, right? But, you know, just for the demo purposes. And you can see the person has some properties here, right? All right, so what you would normally do is edit some code, add some test, build, you know, open test explorer or something.
Or you do the clicky thing right next to the reference thing and then run the test.
Yeah, what I will actually do is go to menu, test, live unit testing. I will start it, right? And you can see in the output window, you know, what's going on. Which is basically what we do is we build, and then we start running tests that we discover.
Okay.
Right. And as you can see here, you get these marks, and this is saying, oh, this test, you know, is executed. It's covered. Right. Mm-hmm. This is saying, this is not covered by any tests. Right. This code in the middle, the product code, and these properties need neither. Right. Because, you know, we didn't use them. Anyway.
So it's doing coverage as well as showing. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is saying this test pass, you know, you have the code lens here, it's integrated to that. We show the time as well, and that passed, right? You can run the test, you can debug the test, etc. Right, so this is our starting point.
Sure.
Right? And I'm just editing, right? So as I'm editing, you can see these icons flash a little bit, and that there's like this hourglass icon show that we are basically in the background running the test and checking if it still passes and updating the code coverage and everything. Right, so let me actually do something useful here. So we go to product, get a person, right? And as you can see, as I will be typing, you will see some results, right? So we have person P here. And now you can see in the middle that this is now covered.
I see,
And I can click on here, and it may be covered by multiple tests, so you have the list of tests here.
That's cool.
And, you know, you also see that all the tests pass, and if you click on it, it goes to that test. Right?
That's cool.
So let's do something more fancy, right? So I add an assertion. Oh, not empty. I want it equals. Let's say that Joe should be the name of the person. Right. So now you can see when we refresh, that obviously we didn't set the name, so the test fails.
Right.
Right. Test-driven development, right? So you start with the test, right? And then you modify your code. Right? And here you can see all the places, all the statements and lines where we have a test that covers that line,
fails.
But fails.
Right.
Right. And so now let me just save this to a variable and set the name to Joe. And we can set the age as well. Return P. Okay. So now if we wait a little bit, right, you will see that now everything passes.
Nice. So you're able to see, because before what would happen is a unit test would fail, and then I would have to, like, I think it was like F12 into the method and F12 all the way down the rabbit hole. And now you're actually making the rabbit hole path a little bit more easy to see, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And you see if you have enough tests, if you have the uncovered code, you obviously need to add more tests.
Sure.
Right?
So the first question I have before you get to it is this running all your unit tests? Is there some projects that have thousands of unit tests?
Yes, that's a very good question. So obviously, we are trying to make it as fast as possible, as responsive as possible.
Sure.
Right. So we are implementing some optimizations.
Okay.
Right? We are detecting what tests are affected by the change and trying to run some on those tests. We're trying to limit the set of projects that we build, etc. Right. So there's on every level we are trying to reduce the number of things that we need to do, and sometimes projects are big, they have complex dependencies, right? So we might not be able to figure it out, right? Sometimes even in MS Build, you don't capture the dependency graph correctly, and your project still builds, and that is not ideal, but that's real, reality, right? And in that case, you can mitigate the fact that you have too many tests and we build too much tests by selecting tests that you want to run. We have actually like this context menu here. In project, which is live tests, and you can include or exclude projects, you can include or exclude files.
That's smart, because you when you're working on code, you're generally working in one specific area. Mm-hmm. You should make those be live unit tested.
Yes, exactly. And you might also want this not just to improve the responsibility of the coverage data, but you might want to use it for making sure that your unit tests are actually covering all your code and not some other tests accidentally calling into your code and covering it, right?
Oh, but I see. Inadvertently.
Like
you wrote a test for a very specific reason that somehow leaks into testing some code in a way that is not important.
Right.
You want to make sure that you get coverage from
it. Or you have higher level tests, right, that are like the concept of unit tests is a little bit flexible, right?
Sure.
So some people write unit tests that cover, much more than just one class or one method, right? So you have these higher level tests that if we run them all the time, then, everything will be covered. But if you really want unit tests for the particular method, you might want to scope it down to just that particular unit test.
That's awesome. So we talked about scripting, we talked about the REPL, we talked about editing continue, and then we also talked about live unit testing. These are awesome features. When can we expect to see them?
So, live unit testing is the new one. Okay. And everything else that we mentioned today has been there. Well, so edit and continue since, version one.
Of course.
C#.
But better and improved.
It's much better in Visual Studio 2015. Then scripting and interactive came with 2015.
Sure.
And live unit testing is 2017.
That's awesome. So to finish up, where can people go to find those demos that you had so that they can also look at them? Because I know I saw there was this really good information on building your own script host. Where is that so people can look at that?
So you can basically start, if you have any questions or you want to see these wiki pages, start on github.net/Roslyn, right? And you can navigate from there. So let me just show that. Right, so this is the main page for Roslyn project, right? You can log issues, provide us feedback. That's actually great. We would love to see that. And then in Wiki, you have a bunch of information about Roslyn. And for example, scripting is here. There is an interactive walkthrough. There is edit and continue, details what is supported, what is not supported. That's all here. Right, so one more thing that I would like to mention.
Do it.
Just to shout out to our friends in Xamarin.
Oh, the notebook stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you saw the scripting API's wiki page, right? And that is an MD file. So what I did was I took that MD file, markdown file, copied it locally, a little bit, tweaked it, and now it's live here in Xamarin Workbooks.
That's so cool.
What Xamarin Workbooks does for you, and it uses Rosin underneath, and it's basically a similar concept as the REPL, except for it's mixed with documentation, and you can rerun the snippets in situ as they are, right? So we add some references here, we add some usings that we need, and now you have the same samples that we looked at before, but they are live. I can hit play here, right? The first time it takes a little bit more time to load, and you can see the result here, right? It's free, right? So 1 + 2
wow,
is free.
Wow, that's cool.
Right? And I can rerun this one, right, et cetera, right? So
is this available now for people to start?
It is available in version 1. It's available. You just search for Xamarin Workbooks. Yeah.
Well, this is amazing. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, thanks for having
me. We've been learning a lot about scripting, REPL, edit and continue, as well as sort of live unit testing. Mm-hmm. So make sure you check that out. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Visual Studio is awesome, by the way. I've been using it for a while. So thanks so much for spending some time with us. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye.